So we're gonna start the Mishnah. Daf Chof Beis Amud Beis. Chof Beis Amud Beis. The Mishnah, the second widest line. You got the widest lines on the bottom. The second widest line. You got a Mishnah there. Now, this Mishnah really is still on the subject of Baal Keri, which we already concluded is not really all that relevant to us. But we're going to see that this Mishnah is going to take us into a whole planet of very, very relevant discussion. Very broad subject, it's very, very relevant. Let's see the Mishnah, let's see where it takes us. So the Mishnah says, Haya oimed b'tfila. A person was davening, that's right, v'nizkar shehu bal keri. In the middle of Shema Esrei, on Chof Beis Amud Beis, second widest line. V'nizkar shehu bal keri. In the middle of Shema Esrei, he remembers that he's a bal keri, he's not supposed to be davening. So what do? Do you cut short? Stop in middle? So the Mishnah says no. Lo yapsik elo yikatzer. Don't stop short. Finish Shema Esrei, but abbreviate the bracha. Say it all very quickly, meaning quickly as in beginning and end of each bracha. Just an abbreviated version of each bracha. Right, not quickly. Abbreviated. What's that? So the Mepharshim say the beginning and end of each bracha. Meaning you say the first few words of the bracha and then Baruch Atah Hashem.
From the point here, remember?
Yeah. I mean, for example, if Ayinu Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem, Roi Feichol Le'am Yisrael. You say the main gist. You know, heal us, Baruch Atah Hashem, Roi Feichol Le'am Yisrael. Bless this year for us, Baruch Atah Hashem, and Baruch Hashem. Maybe abbreviate each of the brachas.
What would the role
of
stopping?
If he stops.
You did.
Stop. No, it's not true. No. If he stops, all of his brachas retroactive are brachal vatala. Because Shemana Esrei is a package deal. Unlike with other things, let's say Birkas Kriya Shema, you say one of the brachas and you don't say the other, you have that bracha. Shemana Esrei is not 18 mitzvahs. Shemana Esrei, if you don't say the whole thing, whatever you do say is a bracha levatol. That's how it works with Shemana Esrei. It's one package deal.
In situation you find
the next to that's coming up. We're going to spend a lot of time on that. What's that? If he remembers the middle of Shema, then he wouldn't have the same problem. He can just stop. Right, you don't need to, you can just stop. The problem here is Shema Esrei. With Shema Esrei, let's say you already said 8 brachas, you got another 10 ahead of you. If you stop, then the 8 brachas that you said are brachas in vain. So therefore we say, don't do that. Finish Shema Esrei. Let's remember that this whole thing is Derabbanan, right? So the Chachamim set it up in a way that to minimize damage control. Okay, so therefore they said finish Shema Esrei, but in an abbreviated way. Don't render your whole Shema Esrei a bracha in vain. But if you remember in the middle of Kriya Shema, let's say you said the first two brachas, you said Yetzer Hara Na'avarabo. Now in the middle of Kriya Shema, you remember if you stop there, the first two brachas are okay. They're not a bracha in vain. Because the brachas don't depend on each other. In Shemana Esrei, all the 18 are interdependent. There's no such thing as saying a couple of brachas Shemana Esrei, not the other ones. He remembers that he's a Baal Keri. Well, again, we paskin that a Baal Keri is allowed to daven. But so this, since the times of the Amoraim, we disregard this whole subject. But here we're still at the point in history where a Baal Keri was prohibited from davening. The question is, what happens if he remembers the middle of davening that he's a Baal Keri? Now, so this halacha per se is not so relevant to us. Yorad litboil. Now, Baal Keri went into the mikveh. But he woke up late. It's already almost 5:30 in the morning. And he's in the mikveh, he wants to make it out to be able to daven on time, right? But the Zman Kriya Shema is approaching. Im yochol la loisolis kasos velikros ad shaloi tehan etzachama. Here we're going with the understanding that the zman kriyashma is netzacham. We've already seen such tanoic opinions. We don't rule this way, but according to this shita, and we'd apply it according to our shita. So the idea is he's in the mikveh. Zman kriyashma is hitting in another 2 minutes. He's either going to say kriyashma now in the mikveh, or he's going to miss it. So if he can get out and cover himself and say kriyashma before netzachama, maybe before zman kriyashma hits, yalev yiskasa v'yikra. That's certainly the thing to do. Come out, get dressed, and say kriyashma. Ve'im lav. But if he's not going to make it, yiskasa b'mayim v'yikra. You're not allowed to say kriyashma naked, but cover yourself in the water.
He doesn't have anything
on his head. What's that?
He's in the mikra in the water. He doesn't have anything on his head.
How would it work with a head covering? I'm not sure.
At the beginning or end of kriyashma here?
What's that?
At the beginning or the end of zman kriyashma?
We mean the end of zman kriyashma.
Morning or next month?
Morning.
Well,
but you're asking why is it netzachama? We're going according to the shita that it's netzachama.
Well, when the Zman
Kriyashma
starts.
What's that? Mishayakir. Mishayakir. There is that sheet. We don't paskin this way. So you cover yourself in the water and daven. Now this of course is going to hold a lot of significance for us in Halacha Lemaisa because it's a very big subject. I'm not sure about the head covering. We'll have to see that too.
Know,
that'll be part
matter.
Of the discussion.
It doesn't matter. Whatever time you decide that that's the Zman Kriyashma. Today is late.
Right. As applicable, whatever it would be. So you say it in the water, meaning, the point here is, that yes, water is considered a covering for the body. We'll qualify that in the Gemara, because, again, it's an absolute that you're not allowed to say Kriyat Shema naked. So that's a chiddush in the Mishnah here, which we'll have to let the Gemara work out.
The other chiddush here is saying that once you're in the mikvah, that's sufficient in terms of the tefillah. You may have it left yet.
No, that's I don't know if that's a chiddush. But yeah, once you're
tayyib. Well, I think the Rambam holds you have to come out and make it such a completed.
Ah, I hear. I don't know.
Besides the water, can't you just cover that part that's considered arid for a minute and all go from there without work?
With your own hands? Questionable. That works just in the practical sense that you're not supposed to walk around with your area exposed. When we're talking in terms of being covered for Kedusha purposes, questionable whether that works. We'll see all that in detail as we go along. The lo yiskase, however, you cannot cover yourself. Right, that's all going to be discussed in this context. All this is the whole subject. This is what I meant when I said that even though we're talking about a Balkari here, which is not Tola Maisa, here the Gemara is Mamish, we're opening up a whole discussion that is very relevant, very fundamental halachas that are relevant all the time, that we're going to be dealing with in detail here. Now, lo yiskase loy b'mayim aroyim v'loy b'mayim mishra. So now, this mission is mamish just touching on a whole bunch of different subjects here. So first of all, there's the issue of not laying naked. That we say, alright, cover yourself in the water. How that works, we'll see. But now we're making another point. If it's filthy water also has to be defined what that means. It doesn't mean muddy water. Muddy water is not called filthy from that halachic perspective. Filthy water means sewer water. The guy is toiveling in sewer water. V'loy b'mei mishra, or in water that was used for soaking flax. Water that was used for soaking flax was especially disgusting.
It's flax, linen?
Yeah.
Is that
you we wear linen as clothing. Why can't you wear flax water?
Flax, you know, because flax water is especially disgusting. The water that flax is soaked in was, smelled terrible. It was disgusting. So if a person is toiveling in such water, then you can't say kriyashma because you can't say dvarim shebikdusha near real filth.
Right.
Not necessarily. Mikvah's got to be ritually clean, but it doesn't have to be physically clean. Sometimes they were pretty pretty disgusting. Hair is okay.
Yeah.
Here we're talking about sewage water. That's what we're talking about here.
It's halakhically okay.
Yeah. But here we're talking sewer water.
What's Ulakaros mean?
What?
Ulakaros?
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Where?
Maybe you can get the hiskasos.
The likros, and to read kriyash, to recite. Okay. Until you dilute the dirty water with clean water. Meaning you have to pour in enough water to dilute it to the extent that the water really turns clean. Now picture that. You're in a mikvah of sewer water. How much water are you going to get a hold of right now before Kriya Shema comes up and pour it in? What, are you going to come with a chuck of water all of a sudden? You can just as quickly get out and get dressed and say Kriya Shema. So the truth is, we'll see in the Gemara that no, really there's two separate points here. Don't cover yourself, don't say Kriya Shema Aflamaisi, you're in repulsive water, period. Now there's a few words missing in the Mishnah. I'm already introducing it just in order to put everything on the table. Now, also, a new halacha is, which is some words missing in the Mishnah, which the Gemara will insert, you're not allowed to daven near urine. If you have a pot with urine inside it, you want to say Kriya Shema, you're not allowed to do it until you pour water in to dilute it. This already makes more sense, right? We're not talking about diluting a whole mikvah. We're talking about diluting a pot with urine in it. Now, v'chama yarchik mehenu min atzoya, how far must you distance yourself from urine or excrement in order to be able to daven, say Kriya Shema, etc.? Dalid amis. 4 amis. You have to be 4 amis away. All this is going to be qualified. But really what we did here in the Mishnah is introduce a whole bunch of subjects. There's a whole bunch of headings here that this Mishnah did, which now we're going to be dealing with at great length in the Gemara, the whole subject of davening, brachas, Kriya Shema, etc., in the halachas of being in a properly clean state, not being around filth, etc., which is very, very relevant and very complex. So we're going to take this slowly. Okay. I'll just note that even in our times it's pretty relevant. In earlier times it was all the more relevant. In earlier times, streets were generally full of stuff, right? The outdoors. Remember, we were just talking about the altar from Keln the other day. He said it was a chiddush, you know, he took me to Europe 100 years ago. When he moved to Moscow, to the big city, he said it was such a machaya that you were allowed to think Torah in the streets. In a big city, there wasn't chamber pots poured out in the streets. But in the small villages where they lived, you couldn't think Torah in the streets. Generally, the streets were very filthy.
Perhaps if you're not within Dalet Amos of the actual filth, but you can smell it.
So as we'll see, all these things the Gemara is going to discuss, the answer to your question is that that's no good. You have to be 4 amis, means 4 amis away from where the smell stops. We'll see in the Gemara. We're going to see. There's a lot of detail here. So we'll move through this slowly. So let's see. So Tan Rabbanan, first we'll address the Chaf Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara is right above the end of the Amud, like the 6 lines up. Chaf Beis Amud Beis. So, first we'll address the beginning of the Mishnah, the part about the Balkeri, and then we'll move into our big subjects. Tan Rabbanan says in the Braisa, Haya Oimed B'Tfila. Person is davening, middle of Shemoneh Esrei, B'Nizkar Shu Balkeri. He remembers that he's a Balkeri. Lo Yapsik. You don't stop, Ela Yikatsa. Rather, abbreviate the rest of Shemoneh Esrei, but complete Shemoneh Esrei. Haya Koyre Batayra. If a person was leaning in the Torah, V'Nizkar Shu Balkeri. Einoy Mafsik V'Oile. Meaning he got an aliyah. In those days, you got an aliyah, that meant you read that portion. Right? So you are now the Balkeri. Don't just stop and go away. Ela Megamgem V'Koyre. Rather, kind of read it briefly. Finish the aliyah, but read it quickly. Mumble through it. I'm sorry? Ene Mafsik V'Oile. Don't stop and go up, meaning don't go away from the bima. What's that?
Towards it.
Yeah, remember that in those days, Chazanim used to stand in a pit. Right. So I don't know if this is different. Maybe it is. I don't know. What's that? That's a modern term. I mean, it's only about a 1,000 years old or so. You don't find the term Aliyah in the Gemara, generally speaking. You know what? I'm qualifying that. I'm not sure, but I think that you don't find the term Aliyah in the Gemara. What's that? Ah, so it's interesting. I would have thought so too, but it's interesting that it seems that in these times they weren't shy about this. I mean, we already saw examples of Rebbe with his Talmidim, and they all know that he was a Baal Keri, and therefore they asked him to teach him things that they were allowed to teach, that he was allowed to teach at the time. It seems that they didn't keep it a big secret that a person was in a state of Keri, which I'm not sure exactly how that worked, because this will get even more embarrassing, because people definitely did keep a secret when they had relations with their wives. In fact, it says in the Gemara that that's one of the things that Talmud Chacham can and should lie about. If he had relations with his wife, can and should lie about. Meaning it says that there are, in the Gemara of Metzia says that there are three things that Talmud Chacham lies about. Meaning that he can and should lie about. Not anything else. Right, it goes both directions. One of them is, if somehow it comes up, Lamaisa, he was with his wife last night, and he needs to change the subject, he can even change the truth. But
maybe our Gemara is doing the opposite. Maybe really he wasn't a Keri, he was lying that he was in order to teach them about Keri. They're sort of like people that will never pass objects, let's say during Havdalah, so that no one will know when there is a Hachak or not. So maybe the Rebbe also, in the case of the one that we saw, would just sometimes would say, I am, but not just to throw people off, so they never know when it was real, when it wasn't.
And that might work for one case. I don't remember now all the examples, but we encountered a few examples where the Tanaim were pretty open about it. I need to go to the mikveh. So I wonder if, yes, relations with his wife is a lot of depth to the idea that has to be kept under wraps. But it could be that if a person had an emission accidentally, something that we would consider embarrassing, maybe they just did it. I don't know. You see the same thing with other things that people will consider personal. Like, for example, the example you gave. Women, there's a whole set of harchakas, right, when a woman is a nida. So, sometimes people feel funny. I don't want to practice the harchakas in front of other people. Is there a heter if I'm embarrassed? So Rav Moshe kind of says, who said that's embarrassing? Maybe you should be embarrassed to show that... that she's not a nida. that you're allowed to have relations with her. Now maybe that's embarrassing. Why is one embarrassing more than the other? So that's like you said, some people in general will always publicly manifest the hachakas so as not to make it apparent. I don't know, but whatever it is, it seems that on the one hand relations with one's wife were kept completely under wraps, while in general if a person was a Baal Keri, it seems that they weren't so shy about it. I don't know. What's that? Mesechta. If they ask him, right, that's the third. Mesechta means if they ask you what you learned, you can claim not to have learned something, right? Yeah.
Isn't it natural for women to be embarrassed about her period, given that it was one of the punishments that were given to Chava?
What's that?
Isn't it natural that a woman would be...
I don't know if one has to do with the other. Are people embarrassed that they have to go work? That was one of the punishments given to Adam. That might be a modern thing. I don't know if it was necessarily like that in earlier times. Could be that in earlier times they were embarrassed to show intimacy with their husband.
I mean, it's a symbol of tumah.
What's that?
Woman's a nida, it's metama,
It's metama, but who said it's embarrassing? It's technical. Person is tmei meis, so tmei sheretz. Who said it's embarrassing? It seems that in earlier times it wasn't. Today it is. In today's sensitivities it is. Earlier times apparently it wasn't. Yeah, that's right. In earlier times everybody had to be very open about their tumah state. There was no two ways about it.
The third one?
The third one is accommodations. If a person had a good host and they ask you, oh, how'd this person treat you? You're supposed to say, oh, pretty lousy. Because otherwise, everybody would besiege him. What? No, the guy rathers it, then you say how good he was, and everybody besieges his house the next day. You don't have to say lousy, just say, nothing special. Okay, whatever it is, we'll leave that above Metzia. But, back to our Gemara, so again, a Baal Keri discovers that he's a Baal Keri, so he doesn't stop. He mumbles his way through the rest. Reb Meir Omer, Ein Baal Keri Rasha Likros Beter Yisam Yishleisha Psukim. Baal Keri is not allowed to read more than three psukim. Meaning, He shouldn't just stop the aliyah in a completely normally unacceptable way, but let's say it's a long aliyah, since the minimal requirement for an aliyah is 3 psukim, don't read more than 3 psukim. Okay, that's as far as the Baal Keri goes. Now we're going to move on to what's really going to be our big subject now for the next little while, and that is this whole discussion of davening in a proper state of cleanliness. So I just want to give a little bit of... I don't know how Rav Meir relates to the slurring. It seems that he's being machmir on the, over the Tanakhama, that whereas the Tanakhama allows him to finish, just requires him to go fast, Rav Meir says don't go any more than 3 psukim. I don't know. I don't know. It's an interesting question.
No, Shmur Esrei is not psukim. I mean, two different things. So
no, he's asking, the Tanakhama said you have to slur, right? You have to mumble your way through the rest of the aliyah. Rav Meir said stop at 3 psukim. Is there a disagreement about the slurring?
Just
learn the Gamgam? Yeah.
He was dealing with reading Sukkah, or he was dealing with
the Tavern? No, he's talking about the reading Sukkah, the laning. The laning, right. That's what I'm not sure. I don't know.
Right. Well, I was talking back to the Mishnah, sorry.
Right. The Mishnah is talking about davening. But
if he says
okay.
He is
being chaylik. The Tanakhama allows him to finish the Aliyah, but you have to mumble your way through it. The Meir says, don't finish the Aliyah. Stop after 3 Pesukim.
What's the purpose of mumbling?
What does he say about the mumbling? I don't know. Now, mumbling means to do it fast. I don't know. What's that? Oh, he is. Yeah, the guy has to cut it short. He has to stop after 3 Pesukim. It might not be as noticeable, you're right, might not be as noticeable, but normal situations, people are expecting the Aliyah to end another 10 Pesukim later, and this guy does 3 Pesukim and stops. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Tanya Idach. I'm sorry? Well, Rashi says b'merutz. The main point is to do it fast. To not say the words is just not doing anything. Oh, there's the different sheet that says that gimgum means you read everything properly, you just skip Hashem's names. Right. Okay. So now we're really going to begin the big subject, the subject of filth, or avoiding filth, or being in the proper state of cleanliness when you daven. So I just want to introduce this subject, give a little bit of a preface before we actually start. Right now what we're going to be dealing with is a lot of different facets to this sugya. There's exposed parts of the body, there's actual filth, there's filth that comes from yourself and is on your body, there's filth in the area, there's having to go to the bathroom, all kinds of different things. Now we have to realize that here we're talking mamish about Isurim Deoraisa. For a person to daven, learn Torah, recite Kriyat Shema, etc., in the vicinity of excrement is an Isur Deoraisa. We're not talking about details in Hilchos Tefillah here. It's an Isur Deoraisa. It says, V'hoya machanecha kadosh, your camp shall be holy, sanctified, meaning pure in the physical and spiritual sense. And this precludes davening near filth. There's another pasuk which says, no nakedness, but here it's understood even in a broader way, no nakedness shall be seen when you're busy saying Dvarim Shel Mikdusha, which includes also filth. So there are two separate prohibitions. There's a prohibition to daven with filth in your area, excrement, let's say. And then there's another Issur D'oraisa to daven when you see excrement. Generally, it sounds like the same Issur, but it's not quite the same Issur. One is about within your four Amis, whether you see it or not. If you know it's there, but you can't see it, you have the same problem. Presence within your four Amis is one Issur D'oraisa. Another Issur D'oraisa is excrement that you see, even if it's very far ahead, even if it's a half a mile ahead. As long as you can see it, it's Issur D'oraisa. Urine is not Issur Mideraisa, it's Issur Midirabbanan, except in a case where it's actually coming out of someone's body. Get used to it. We're going to be getting into these types of details, but this is what we're going to be busy with. And it's important to realize this, because this also has important implications in halacha. The only Issa d'oraisa of saying Tvarim Shebekdusha in the presence of urine is while the urine is actually coming down. Once it's hit the ground and it's on the floor, it's only an Issa d'Rabban. This, as we'll see, has a lot of implications.
What you're saying, Rabbi, you also apply that to Shavasim?
What's that?
You apply that to, like, Shavasim?
A dead mouse.
A mouse, roach,
okay, so we will be getting more into the details as we go along. In a general way, I'll say that filth includes not just excrement, but yes, it includes anything that stinks as a result of, let's say, decay. And therefore, yes, a dead animal that hasn't yet started to decay is fine. But once the dead animal is emitting an odor, it's included in this iser as well.
I have a question. What about this is very practical. Sometimes you're davening and you can smell the person behind his breath.
What's that?
That's a real problem. That's not different. That's, you smell the person's
okay.
breath behind
no, that's not a problem. That's not a problem. That's not called filth. Not every
even
unpleasant smell.
Even if it's the worst, where is it?
Yeah. Right? Might be a shiloh v'inodim l'chaveroi, but it's not a shiloh hilchas tefila. But let's say vomit, for example, which is actually food that's already, you know,
processed.
That is a shiloh. So we'll see as we go along. This is a shiloh that might be nagia at the public garbage dumps. We'll see. We're going to work out all the details as we go along. So now, Tanya Idach, Abraisa says as follows. If a person is in the middle of Shvina Esrei, and then he notices excrement ahead of him. This was something that was a likely scenario in earlier times, because again, chamber pots were poured out in front of the house. So a person is davening and he sees excrement ahead of him.
He knows about horses and other animals.
Oh, animals, the truth is that men's manure is the most severe. We'll see that there are different animals have different statuses. For example, a cat's manure is more severe than a dog's manure, which actually makes things easier in a way, because dog's manure is more likely to be on the ground, cat's manure is generally buried. But we'll see. As we go along in the Gemara, we're going to mamish break it down to the what's what. But right now, in a general way, we're going to talk about human excrement. Yeah.
How does that compare with there? It's supposed to continue.
We'll see. That will depend on circumstances. We'll see. Meaning, all right. We'll get to the Gemara that we'll deal with that. So now, the person's in the middle of davening Shemoneh Esrei, then he notices excrement ahead of him. Mahalik lefanov. So he should walk ahead in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Yeah, walk ahead. Until you have it four amis behind you. You're not supposed to have excrement ahead of you. Well, in a shul this probably wouldn't happen, we would hope.
Right.
But outside. Yeah, especially in earlier times, and it was common, people were often on the road, and roads were often full of this stuff. Remember, this is not today's reality. So now, so you go ahead until it's four amos behind you. So the Gemara says, "Va'tanya litzdadim." We have a braisa that says that it doesn't have to be behind you. It's enough that it's not ahead of you. Meaning, it's enough if it's to your side. So the Gemara says, "Loi kash." It's not a contradiction. Generally, no, you have to have it behind you. It's not enough that it's to the side. It's got to be behind you. Hada efsha, hada lo efsha. But here it depends if it's possible or not. Meaning, if you can move further ahead, it's better to go ahead and have it behind you. But if you can't go further ahead, let's say there's a river there, okay? The furthest you can go is the river, and it's off to the side. So, if you can't, we say it's good enough if it's to the side, but it's never allowed to be ahead of you. It's never allowed to be ahead of you. Oh. So Shlomo is asking a good question. What do you mean you can't go ahead? Right? The excrement is here, right at the riverside. So you go all the way up to the riverside. Now you can't go further, so it's to your side. Turn around, and then it's behind you. What's the problem? So the Mepharshim say, no, you want to face Mizrach.
So
that's what this Gemara is actually saying. The only reason not to turn is because then you're not going to be facing Mizrach. This year the Gemara says that's called not possible. That's called that you can't get it behind you. Facing Mizrach takes precedence to having it behind you. Okay. Now, what's that? What if it's ahead of you? If it's ahead of you?
Well, the whole problem, you said it takes precedence to be facing Mizrach over
Preferring to have it behind you than to the side. Meaning better to have it to the side and face Mizrach, right? You're at a river. And it's right to the side. You can either turn that way and have it behind you, but then you're facing the wrong direction, or you can face ahead towards Mizrach and you have it to your side. So better to have it to your side and face Mizrach. What's that? Ah, very good. The place can note that. They say with Kriya Shema, there's no reason not to turn. Right? Kriya Shema, certainly turn, and then you'll turn your back on them, then it'll be behind you.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And the baby cuts loose.
Right.
He's in the middle of Shimon Esrei. He can't move. Everybody else around can smell.
If he's in the middle of Shimon Esrei in such a situation, he's going to have to move. He's going to have to move. Yeah. So we'll see.
It's up to him to move the other people.
Well, the other people won't be able to daven. They'll have to, you know, if he's not moving away, they'll have to move away. They won't be allowed to continue their davening as long as that excrement is there. And that's actually what's coming up now. This is something that really could be relevant. Tanya, Hayom is spalah. If a person was davening, umatza tzoya b'mkayma, and he finds that there was excrement right nearby, within four amos. Omar Rabbah, so Rabbi says, now this is a no-no. You're not allowed to daven with excrement near you. Omar Rabbah, afal pisha chotot tefilah se tefilah. Even though he sinned, he transgressed the nisa d'oraisa by davening with excrement nearby, his tefilah counts. But the evad, he was yaitza.
We're talking about someone who did it on purpose.
What's that? No, he didn't check. Meaning, he was negligent. He should have checked the area, as we'll see soon. He didn't check the area. And Lamaisa turned out that yes, there was excrement there. So we'll see, this could be pretty relevant. So Afal Pishet Chotat Tfilah Se Tfilah. He didn't check. Lamaisa, there was excrement there. He sinned, but the Tfilah counts. Maskif Le Rava. So Rava challenges this. Vozevach Rishoin Toyevo. Listen to these harsh terms. You know what this is? This is an offering of a Rasha, which is considered an abomination. Wow, sounds like fine detail of halacha. Look what this is being termed as. We'll put this into perspective. What's that? Right? That too, right? Selo Amar Rava. Rava says no. Hayu v'chata, since he sinned, afal pi she'ispalad filosei teyeva, even though he davened, his davening is an abomination. He wasn't yotze, he's got to daven again. So in other words, what we're saying is that yes, if a person discovers that there was excrement nearby, he didn't check the area out first, right? Then what's that? Oh, so it's a chiddush, right? We have to get used to the idea, and I'll put it into perspective shortly. But yeah, the Gemara is saying that that's called a rasha. But we have to put this into perspective. So first of all, the place. So what does that mean? I come to shul, right? I have to check the benches nearby. What does this mean? The Gemara is saying, what's rasha about him? He didn't know that there was excrement there. Okay. So what's Russia about him is, the rishis is that he didn't check. So the Paiskim say that this certainly only applies in an area where there was reason to suspect that there would be excrement. Then we say that a person is a Russia for not checking, and that we'll explain momentarily. And if he davens, he wasn't yotze. But in a situation where there was no reason for me to suspect that there should be any excrement, which in most situations nowadays is the case. Person comes to shul, right? Then he discovers something in the drawers ahead of him, right? Okay, that's certainly not something you have to suspect. Then he's not a rasha, and he doesn't have to repeat his davening either. You're only not yoitze if it's something that you should have suspected.
Can you give us a scenario in today's day?
So where is this relevant in today's day and age? You know, it's relevant that the classic shaila is, what happens if you daven mincha at home and then you discover that your 2-year-old was running around in the middle of Shemana Esrei? You get a whiff of your 2-year-old's diaper. This is a shaila
lemaisa. But then you find out later on she did have a diaper at that time.
And she was around you.
Yeah.
Right. What's that?
All ages.
I'm sorry?
All ages.
From a pretty young age, meaning from the age that a child can eat. A child's excrement is called excrement from the age that he can eat a kezayis of bread b'kdei achilas pras, meaning from the age that he can eat, let's say, half a slice of bread within 4 minutes, which is, you know, we'll put it about probably at about a year plus, so somewhere between a year and a half. Up till then, the excrement doesn't count. But this is the case, it's lamaisa. So lamaisa, the poskim say that it really depends on the situation. Generally speaking, you don't have to assume that your child has a dirty diaper unless there's reason to think that he might.
What's the reason besides smelling? Is there any other reason?
What's that?
What's the reason to consider? Maybe you haven't changed it, let's say, if you haven't changed it in 8 hours? And what's considered reason?
Yeah. Meaning, normally you don't have to assume that a baby has a dirty diaper. But yes, in such a situation where, let's say, you know that this kid has been running around with the same diaper since last night, right? And you started davening because you don't have time to change it now. And then what do you know? Surprise, surprise. It's not drooping for nothing, right? So that's called poshea. This person was negligent. This person should have checked, and he was not yaitse. But in a normal situation where the kid, no, he's being changed regularly, and you don't have, the place can say, you don't have to assume that now his diaper is dirty. Place can do raise the question, also not so relevant, when a child, this is something the place can mention, when a child is in the stages of being trained, when he's running around without a diaper, and is liable to actually be going to the bathroom on the floor. That's a shaila.
What about getting
what is that a child?
What's that?
What is it,
check? No, so if it then turns out that there actually was something on the floor, you might be a pusheya. Person might be considered negligent. Okay. What's that? Well, for not checking.
No,
that's fine. We're saying, what if it turns out that he did? Meaning, you stood to daven without checking, and there actually was something on the floor.
What about making a whiff of it in the middle? You realize your baby got a diaper in the middle. You stop davening.
Oh, so if you smell the diaper in the middle of davening, you have to move away to a place where you can't smell it.
Even if you're in the middle of
Shemoneh Esrei.
Or better say in the middle of a bracha.
What's that? Doesn't matter. You can't continue as long as the baby is there. So that has to be clear. And here again, we're talking about an issur d'oraisa. We're not talking about a fine detail of Hilchos Tefillah. To daven in the vicinity of a dirty diaper that you can smell is an issur d'oraisa. And yes, you have to walk away in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Go upstairs. Better idea, go to shul. If you can't see it and you don't smell it, you can't see it because it's covered, and you also don't smell it, that's fine. Meaning, in a case where a kid, you know, a kid has a dirty diaper, but it's well covered and it doesn't smell, that would be fine. Right, so there also, once it's covered sufficiently that there's no smell coming out, that would be okay.
What about, what's probably more common is, it's a little, not exactly this, but let's say, you know, people let out wind.
Oh, that's a subject in itself. We're going to see that addressed broadly in the Gemara, because that's a whole, it has a different set of guidelines. We'll see. That also, we'll see in the Gemara at which point it's already considered expired. Right, there is a point that it's already considered not nega anymore. We'll see. Okay. Now, I just want to put this into perspective. It's hard for us to really integrate that this is called a Rasha, right? It sounds to us like, you know, fine details of Hilchos Tefillah, but to integrate that this is called a Rasha, we have to realize that really this concept is a very fundamental concept of Hashem's honor. This whole inyan, Hashem entrusted you with Divrei Kedusha, right? Hashem gave you the right to say His name. We have to appreciate what that means. the right to say it, the Rabbi Avigdor Miller put it, was the word Adoy, right, Yud Kei Vav Kei, the way we say it, right, is not, does not translate as God. The Hebrew word for the word God is Elohim, which could also be said Elohim. It's a generic term for God, whether you're talking about our God or whether you're talking about a false God. The word is Elohim. That's the dictionary translation of the word, right? You wouldn't say a false Adoy. Why? Adoy, right, or the Yud Kei Vav Kei, the names that we use are actually kiviyachol what we call personal names. It's like the difference between saying king and actually addressing the king by name. Adoy, you're actually addressing the king by name, which is something that you really can't do, right? Just what? Hashem said, I want you to call me by name. We have to realize that that's something we have to treat with the utmost reverence, and therefore really, again, we're talking about sensitivities that to the fullest is too much for us to comprehend.
We say
there's a lot of different terms that we use each time depending on the context what fits. We say Hashem Elohim, right? Hashem our God. It's like saying Lahavdil, King Edward. You might say both together. So now,
for our sake, it was for Hashem. He made us.
Obviously, it's for our sake.
He's not really grossed out by it.
Grossed out?
Meaning he's not offended by it.
Wait. Let me first finish developing the point. Let me first finish developing the point before we. So, really, and this is essentially the way it should be, and this is actually noted by the Poskim. This is like serious. This is halacha. To whatever extent we can, we just don't have the capacity to do this. A person should really feel a sense of trepidation every time before he says the name. Right? He said about the Rebbe Baruch Ber Leibovich, also a man of piety that we can't comprehend. But he stammered every time he said Hashem's name. Can you imagine what it looked like when he said Hoidu? But he stammered every time he said Hashem's name. Right? But essentially that's how it would be. Just it's impossible for us to retain that level of alertness and sensitivity on a regular basis. But the point is, part of our job is, you are entrusted with very, very sacred things. Make sure you're keeping them right. Don't drag them through the mud. That's what really this whole subject is about. Divrei Torah, Divrei Kedusha, all these things are things. It's like when you have no choice and you give something very, very delicate to a 6-year-old to carry across the street, but you warn him a million times, you don't understand the significance of this object, right? You better be careful with it. So Hashem gave his Divrei Kedusha into our hands. The least we could do is make sure that we keep it, we treat it with extreme care and caution. And that's what this whole subject is about. And therefore, yes, it says severe things about people who do go and engage in Torah or Divrei Kedusha in filthy places. It says very severe things about such people, because that's basically what they're doing. The king gave you his crown to take care of, so to speak, right? And you're playing frisbee with it, right? Or, you know, throwing it in the mud. So you have to realize, yes, we were given the right to kiviyachol address Hashem by name. We were given the right to connect to Hashem through his Torah. We have to realize that we're dealing with the highest, most charged things. And therefore, we better be very, very, very careful to keep it clean. Now, the truth is that, to an extent, this is an end in and of itself. Meaning, we show our reverence. Why does it need to be filth, bichlal? Why is it important to have filth in this world? Part of the point is that we show our reverence for Hashem's name by keeping it away from filth. Meaning, in that sense, filth serves a positive. It's a means of us showing our reverence for Hashem. Right? That's what this is about. Really, it's a fundamental element of the mitzvah of Yiras Shamayim, of approaching Hashem with the proper awe. And that's why this is considered such a fundamental thing, to the extent that Rabbi Yonah says that people who are careless about these things, he says, I have to, again, check out what he's basing it on, but he said this karas, right? When people just don't take these things seriously. So that's...
There's cars for dumbing their own bad blood?
No, so I don't think he means on a one-time basis. I have to check again what exactly he's referring to. But he says we're talking about very, very severe... The concept is a very severe concept. What were you asking?
About the concept itself. Is it because of Hashem, you know, sees that object and finds it offensive? Or is it that we, you should have, from our standpoint, a more reverent attitude.
Well, it's like everything with Hashem. We're supposed to act appropriately towards Hashem. Does he care if you act appropriately or not? Hashem doesn't need anything. He's not offended by anything. He doesn't need us. We're nothing from that sense. But in the context of our relationship with him, we have to act appropriately.
Did Adam HaRishon make brachas?
What's that?
Did Adam make brachas?
Don't remember.
Because he was naked.
What's that?
Naked with Hashem.
His naked was a different naked. He barely had a body then. We'll leave that aside. We're dealing with humans as we know them. Okay. Fine. I'll put it in another way. All these halachas are our means of conferring kedusha upon inyonik kedusha. Because the truth is, in our world, our world works with contrasts. Meaning, how do you show how important something is by making sure you keep it clean? So the only way it manifests that I consider this an important thing is because it has the potential to get dirty, and I'm so particular to keep it clean. Right? Get what I'm saying? If we say in a more pashut way, you want to really bring out that something is white, put it against a black background. Right? Therefore, since a central part of our function in this world is to manifest Hashem's greatness, we dafka want to have filth around us so that we show how particular we are and how careful we are to make sure that we keep this far away from filth. And that way, we have an opportunity to show our reverence for Hashem. So by being makbid about these halachas, it's a lot more than just all the annoying technicalities of how clean you have to be. Here we're mamish being mekayim, the fundamental function of bringing out kavod shamayim, of manifesting the glory of Hashem by making sure that we keep it in the most pristine and pure state. But we'll see more next time, wherever we're holding in the week.